Amen. Well, good morning.
To those in the room, I apologize for the state of my voice. I've been fighting off a cold this week. To those listening to the recording back, my voice sounds fine and the recording is broken. Now, it is officially spring. You wouldn't know it from looking outside today, but this week we had the spring equinox. We had the warmest day of the year so far. Birds were singing, flowers were budding, and so there is one thing on all of our minds. Money. Spring is when all the money stuff happens. Our students will be looking at the last few pennies of the term two student loan. Those who are into politics will be making their predictions for the spring budget. You might even be in the middle of performance review season, trying to reframe buying the tea bags as leading a cross-functional staff morale initiative. Whichever it is for you, this is a time of year where we all start looking at our bank account and thinking, you know what, it might be nice if there was just a little more. Maybe this could be the year we go to Center Parcs rather than a caravan. Maybe this year you could finally go for that Netflix package in Ultra HD. When we think about money, we tend to think about justice. If you are following politics at the moment, you'll know that a lot of the conversation is about who deserves to have the money. Who should have a bit more and who should have a bit less? Should the sick be provided for by the healthy? Should the old be provided for by the young? Now, if either of those pricked a little something within you, it's because money makes us think about justice, how the world should be. How do you react when you find out somebody earns just a little bit more than you? Are you gracious and understanding? Good for you. Or do you feel something else? What if I was to introduce you to someone after the service and say, hey, here's my friend that I brought with me. They don't have a job, but they've just been given a free house and a free car and some spending money. Would you be thinking, good for you, I bet you deserve every penny? Or would you be thinking something less gracious? So money has a unique way of finding our jealousy button and just hammering it. And it does that because we associate money with happiness. Rich people just have nicer things. Money goes in, good things come out. So on some level, it seems important that probably the right people should have the good things. If someone has more money than you, but they don't work as hard, there's a sense that something has gone wrong. Maybe the money should be in the hands of the right people, because money equals happiness. But today, we're going to hear a challenge to that. In fact, it's probably the most famous challenge to that idea ever spoken. Today, we're looking at one of Jesus' first sermons in Matthew chapter 5. And Jesus is talking about the good life. Specifically, he's talking about who the good life belongs to. All right, but before we can get there, I need to introduce you to a diagram that I've been working on really very hard. Some of you will know that I work in the corporate world now, where presentation is everything, so I've really taken the time to get this right. I present the Pete Curran model of the good life. Patent pending. If we haven't met, I'm Pete Curran. Hello. This isn't somebody else's that I've thrown in here. So in the Pete Curran model of the good life, it goes like this. And I think, I've got a laser, but I can't get it to work on the screen. That would be very corporate at this point. Okay, the Pete Curran model of the good life. It starts with, you have money, right? That's the input in my model, right, man? I didn't intentionally make that worse. That's misaligned. That's really annoying me now. I don't know when that's happened. I'm going to pretend it's part of the joke. Okay, so the input is you have money. Oh no, Hugh's taking a picture of it. It's permanent. I don't have time to fix it. You have money. Because you have money, you can buy nice things, right? You can buy like beer and BMWs and Pokemon cards or whatever you're into. And then because you get to buy the good things, you are happy, right? You get the good life. And like all PowerPoint models, it's rigorous. If you remove any one part, it doesn't work. right? So if you have like a billionaire in a jail cell, they have the one on the left, but not the one on the middle. So that it doesn't work, right? A billionaire in a jail cell has money, but can't buy things. So they don't get the good life. Similarly, if you don't have money, you can't buy things. So you don't get the good life, right? So this is a rigorous model. And you can laugh at me, but can you disagree? Right? Is this not everything we understand about money in popular culture? Right? Which is money goes in, you use the money to buy things, buying things equals the good life, right? Whether those things are Pokemon cards or holidays or Bitcoin or whatever, you get the good life. Right? So who does the good life belong to? Well, maybe it belongs to people who have money. But there is an alternative model, and I'm really hoping this slide isn't broken because that's really annoying me. Okay, there is an alternative model. We don't talk about it a lot in polite culture, but it is pretty popular. Oh no, it's just as bad. It's just as bad. Man, this is going on my performance review. Okay, so you have power. This is an alternative model. You have power. Power is the input. And because you have power, you can do things, right? You can go places. You can ask people to do things for you. You can get what you want out of a situation rather than what somebody else wants. So here's my alternative model, which is that you have power. You use that power to do things that you want to do or get other things to do things you want to do. And that leads to the good life, right? So I'm thinking here about like celebrities, politicians, or your boss, right? These are people who live the good life. And which of us hasn't lain awake at night thinking that we could do better if we just had a bit more power, right? If we were king or queen for the day, or even just like area manager for the day, not only would you get the good life, but you would sort it all out. And then everyone else would get the good life as well. The good life would return because you had the power. So who does a good life belong to? Well, maybe it belongs to the powerful. Now, these are just two of the models that the world follows. And they would have been just the same then as they are now. When Jesus was speaking thousands of years ago, there were rich people who could buy the things they wanted, and there were powerful people who could do the things they wanted. So in some ways, the world hasn't changed. Money and power go in, the good life comes out. But let's hear from someone who disagrees. Let's go to Matthew 5. So we're at Matthew 5, we're starting at verse 3, and this is Jesus laying out his model. So we've heard the Pete Curran model, we're now going to hear the Jesus Christ of Nazareth model for the good life, and he tells us who the people are who get to live it. So Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they'll be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me." Now, of course, the me there is Jesus. So to understand this, I think we have to pull out that word blessed. It's a word that we only really use in a church context. And if you're new to church, you'll notice that even I stumbled over it. I kept saying like blessed, which is just kind of like a church habit, because it's hard to say the word blessed as one syllable, right? It's kind of church language. So we should probably try and translate that into everyday language. And the way that we can think of the word blessed is if you are blessed, things are going really well for you. If you are blessed, things are going really well for you, right? If you're blessed, if you're experiencing blessing, we could reasonably say things are going really well for you. Which is why it's so strange that Jesus begins one of his most famous sermons by saying, "Blessed are you when things are going really badly for you." You've come along to hear this famous preacher. He stands up in front of thousands of people and says, "Things are going really well for you when things are rubbish for you." Now, of course, I'm talking about being poor in spirit. And maybe you're not exactly sure what it means to be poor in spirit, but I think we can all agree that it doesn't sound good. Right? None of us are going to be waking up tomorrow thinking, boy, I hope I'm poor in spirit today. Today's going to be the day. Right? Broadly, it means that you might be anxious or depressed. You might be someone who has no power or struggles to get things done. And Jesus stands up in front of a huge crowd of people and says, things are going really well for you if you are anxious, depressed, and powerless. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So who does the good life belong to? Well, I think to understand this, we need to revisit my model of the good life, because as you may have guessed, my model is broken. Everyone in here is among the richest people who have ever lived. Now, I know you'll have a reaction to that. But everyone in here is among the richest people who have ever lived, right? If you were to bump into King Solomon with all of his riches, he would marvel at the fact that your toilet flushed and the fact that you could use it inside. Imagine the richest person in all of history and then remember that dentists only invented anesthesia a couple of decades ago. Or what about power? Maybe you don't feel very powerful, and yet any of us could pull out our phones right now and summon a personal driver, a cooked meal, any manner of gadget that's been shipped from halfway across the world from Amazon. You could even sit here in church right now and book a plane ticket to a different country. Does that make you happy? So I'm beginning to suspect that my model of money in, power in, happiness out might not work tremendously well. So Jesus' model points to something else. And in the middle of it is a relationship with God. So in Jesus' model, the good life belongs to those who are poor in spirit, who are anxious and depressed, because those who are anxious and depressed are going to have to rely on God. In Jesus' model, the poor in spirit are blessed because they are going to have to rely on God. And Jesus says, theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And that phrase literally means heaven will be your king, right? God will be your king, right? Blessed are the anxious and depressed because they're going to make God their king. And it turns out that's a really good thing. So I'm dreading this now. We could represent Jesus' model a bit like this. Hey, okay, well, that's very fitting, right? My one was broken. Jesus can do alignment. Okay, so we could describe Jesus' model a bit like this, right? So Jesus' model is, the input is, you are poor in spirit. Life is hard for you. You find it hard to get things done. Maybe you're anxious and depressed. Maybe people don't listen to what you say. And therefore, you rely on God because you can't rely on yourself. And because you rely on God, you get a relationship with God. And it turns out a relationship with God is a significantly better thing than beer or BMWs or Pokemon cards or holidays or, you know, cooked meals being delivered. So the rich and powerful are going to rely on themselves. They'll earn good money. They'll use that money to buy things that they want. And then they'll find out too late that none of those things make you happy. And young people in the room, if you're still under the illusion that money is going to make you happy, just find someone who looks old and depressed like me. It's not going to make you happy. But blessed are the poor in spirit because they're going to rely on God and they're going to find out that all good things come from God. So who does the good life belong to? Jesus also says the good life belongs to people who mourn. Things are going really well for you if you're mourning. And again, here's the model. You're mourning. You're having a horrible time. Something bad has happened to you. So you rely on God. And because you rely on God, you get a relationship from God, a relationship with God from whom all good things come. Those who are happy, they're not going to turn to God. Those for whom life is going really well, they're going to think they can carry on their own. They're not going to get that relationship with God. Or what about the meek? The meek is not really a word that we use anymore. No one's going to grab you in the morning and say, you're looking a bit meek today. But it means the downtrodden, the people who are not going to speak for themselves, the people who struggle to be assertive, the people with no power. Oh, the alignment's gone. The people with no power, Jesus says, the meek, they have no power. They're going to have to rely on God. And then God is going to give them the earth. So in each of these cases, and we've just dealt with the first three verses of this sermon, in each of these cases, what Jesus is revealing is that all good things come from God. My model at the start was maybe good things come from money and power. If you've tried, you know that doesn't work. Jesus is saying, look, all good things come from God. You're blessed if you're relying on God. Now, if you've been a Christian for a while, you've probably worked out that that's the case. Or at least you might have noticed that the other things aren't quite adding up for you. The people who mourn are going to discover that there is a God who loves to comfort them. The people who wake up happy every day aren't even going to look. Those who are downtrodden and powerless are going to turn to God to solve their problems. Those with power are going to try and fix it themselves. So Jesus begins his sermon by taking three of the groups least likely to be living the good life. Three of the groups who no one would point to and say, I want to be like them. And declaring that these are the luckiest people in the room. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Because all of them are going to experience God. And all good things come from God. In the next three verses, Jesus begins to talk about some of the characteristics that blessed people have. Some of the ways that you could describe those who are living the good life. Now, forget for a moment that we're talking about Jesus' kingdom, and just consider that question in the world as we are. If you were to picture in your head the people who are living the good life, what kind of traits do they have? How would you describe them? They're probably rich. They're probably good looking. They probably don't have health conditions. They might have a lot of possessions, and they might have a lot of control over their lives. They probably go to exotic locations and have a meaningful job. But when Jesus chooses, he says the good life belongs to those who hunger and thirst. He says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. If you hunger and thirst to do things the right way, to do things in God's way, in your relationship with God and your relationship with others, Jesus says the good life belongs to you. You hunger and thirst for righteousness, and therefore you rely on God, you look to him for how to live, and therefore God fills your hunger. Now, we could have used a different model here. Maybe you hunger and thirst for something else, right? Maybe you hunger and thirst to be rich. Well, bad news. If you hunger and thirst to be rich, you can't control that. Maybe you'll get it, maybe you won't. Maybe you hunger and thirst to be powerful or famous. Well, again, bad news. Probably that's not going to happen for you. The good news for those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, to be right with God, is that you actually can't fail that one. If you hunger and thirst for righteousness, God is going to give you that righteousness right now, if you want it, in this world. And then later, when he gives everything righteousness, the whole world is going to be righteous. So if you hunger and thirst for righteousness, good news. You can have it right now, and then you'll have it forever. Now, Jesus follows this with two more. Both turn the world on its head, and both are things that drive you towards God. Blessed are the merciful. If you forgive others, good news. God is going to forgive you. Blessed are the pure in heart. If you are innocent and naive, God is going to reveal himself to you. So the picture that Jesus is building here is that all good things come from God, and the people who get the most out of life will be those who spend the most time with God. So who does a good life belong to? The cynical mastermind who defeats their enemies looks good in the world, but God is not going to reveal himself to them. Someone who dishes out their own justice is always going to be unsatisfied at how little they can do, while those that show mercy hand over their problems to God. So who does a good life belong to? Well, the picture that's emerging is upside down. The good life belongs to the weak. The good life belongs to the anxious. The good life belongs to those left hungering for justice. And it belongs to them because the good life is all about God. These are the people who are going to meet with God, build a relationship with him. The good life is not about money. It's not about power. It's not about strength. It's about one thing. And that thing is a relationship with your Creator. So we've heard about the type of people who are blessed. We've heard what characteristics they have and how we could describe them. And the final three lines in Jesus' sermon here are about how blessed people act when they're out in the world and how other people respond to them. And at this point, you might be thinking, well, at least these people are going to be popular. At least these people who are out there being merciful and meek, who are forgiving people, who don't have a lot of influence, at least everyone's going to want to have them around. And yeah, I mean, a lot of you know the ending to this one, but sorry, it's bad news. Jesus describes the people who hunger and thirst for the right thing to be done, are people who show mercy, who are pure in heart. He describes those who don't desire power, and then he tells them that they're going to be hated and attacked for it. In the final three lines of his sermon, Jesus celebrates the peacemakers and then says, the good life belongs to those who are attacked because they follow Jesus. He says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and say all kinds of evil against you because of me. So the good life belongs to those who follow God, even though they are going to be attacked for it. I wonder whether that gels with your first answer to that question. When I first asked, who does a good life belong to? Would your answer have been people who are getting attacked? So the good life belongs to people who rely on God and get attacked because of it. Take a moment to consider how that stacks up against your current plans. Students, how does that align with the career that you're planning? People who are already working, how does that align with your week, your month, your year, what you are hoping to get done in the near future? Are you acting in a way that means you will be part of the good life, or are you trying to buy it with something else? If I were to read that list again, how many of those blessings can you claim for yourself? And how many would you want to claim? To work out how we can apply this passage in our lives, I'd like to think about a very simple statement. Now, this one is another Pete Curran statement rather than biblical statement, but it's a very simple statement. Those with more money can buy more things. Those with more money can buy more things. Now, this is not biblical. This is just an obvious statement. This is from me, but I think you'd struggle to disagree with it, right? Those with more money can buy more things. And the reason that I'm sharing it is it's a statement that works in two ways. Firstly, it's an observation. It is a thing that you can see. If you walked around the shopping center with someone who had a lot of money, that statement would obviously be true. You know, after they bought their fifth iPad or whatever, you would have to say, yep, okay, I can definitely observe that someone with more money can buy a lot of things. So that statement is an observation. But it's also then a promise. If you really wanted to be able to buy more things, it's a thing that you could aim for, right? Those with more money can buy more things. So if you want to buy more things, you can get more money, right? It's a promise. You can say, well, I see this being true, and I could also aim for it. So it's an observation. I see this being true, and it's a promise. It's something that you could aim for. Some other examples would be those who drive cars get to their destination faster. Those who go to the gym probably have healthier bodies. And those that go back for the 10th slice of pizza probably don't. Each of these is an observation about the world that you can say and say, well, that seems true. But they're also a promise of how you could get a particular outcome. So in this sermon, Jesus is making observations, but he's also making promises. It is simply a true statement that the pure in heart will see God. It's an observation. But if you're not pure in heart, it's also a promise. If you can somehow change your heart, you will see more of God. In this sermon, Jesus tells us how we can make God our king, how we can be comforted by him, how we can have our desires filled, how we can be shown mercy, how we can be called children of God, and ultimately how we can inherit the earth. And he gives us the blueprint to get there. So what should we do about it? Well, I wonder which of the statements in that sermon you found the most challenging. Do you mourn? Or are you keeping yourself out of situations where you might suffer? Are you willing to be powerless? Or are you doing everything you can to make sure that you're protected? In this sermon, Jesus provides an observation of the kind of people who live the good life. The kind of people who others would point to and say things are going really well for them. And then he offers promises of how you could get there. So my question is, which promises are you following? Are you structuring your life in such a way that you will get more money? Are you structuring your life in such a way that you will get more power? Are you aiming for higher status or a better career? All those people existed when Jesus gave this sermon, and he didn't say that the good life belonged to any of those people. And he doesn't say that because none of those things are going to work. None of those things are going to work. So all good things come from God, and my question is, are the promises you are following leading towards him, or actually are they taking you somewhere else? Okay, so in a moment, I'm going to ask the band to come back up. While they do that, I want you to think about a couple of challenges. My challenges are, what are the things in your life that you are hoping are going to make you happy? What are the things in your life that you are hoping are going to keep you safe? And what are the things in your life that you are hoping are going to give you meaning? All right, so while the band come back up and get set up, three things to think about. What are the things that you're hoping are going to make you happy? What are the things in your life that you're hoping are going to keep you safe? And what are the things in your life that are hoping are going to give you meaning? Now, the last thing from me today is just a reminder that it would be very easy to misunderstand this sermon. It'd be very easy to misunderstand this sermon. If you are sat there right now thinking, oh boy, I've got a lot of work to do. Pete's just told me that I have to be meek, I have to be powerless, I have to be poor in spirit. I'm going to have to go out there and quit my job, get much worse at everything. I'm going to have to find something to love and then let it go so that I can mourn. It would be very easy to misunderstand this sermon. This is a challenging sermon that Jesus gives, but the point of it is not to say, all right, everyone, roll up your sleeves, get to work. The point of what Jesus says is not to tell you that you need to get better. The point is to tell you that actually you're not good enough. Jesus is not going to give you a 10-step plan by which you get up every morning at 6 a.m. and get to work and you achieve all these things. What he does instead is very different. He offers to transform you from the inside. He offers to transform you so that actually, instead of thinking, oh, I must find a way to be meek, he's going to transform you so that you want what he wants, so that you act in the way that he acts, so that you receive those blessings, not through what you're doing, but through the way that he transforms you. So I'd like to finish by reading the sermon again, because it's far better than anything I've said. I think the optimum version of this sermon is I just read this like 10 times. I want to finish by reading this again, and I want to just draw your attention to those two things, the observation and the promise. If you recognize any of these things in yourself, you are blessed. You're blessed because of that relationship with God. And if there's anything in here that you think, man, I wish I had that, then it's time to go to your Father and pray and ask for that thing. Because Jesus is going to transform you to get it. Okay, so Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because Jesus. Where are you looking for the good life? Amen.